Aaron Portsline from the Columbus Dispatch joins us. Aaron, this pesky Columbus team, man, they got a hard-working team. A lot of people think if they can get into the playoffs, they can maybe do some damage. After a really slow start, the last 40 games, they've been pretty good.
Yes, they have. Second year in a row, they've finished with a bang after a bit of a slow start. I don't know. I mean, I think this team should be working its tail off to catch Philly or catch New York in the Metro. I know Pittsburgh is seen by many to be vulnerable right now. I don't know if I buy that. Boston looks like a world beater right now. Columbus 0-7-1 against Boston and Pittsburgh this season. So I don't know how much faith people would have in them going into the playoffs if they remain a wild card team and face one of those two teams. But yeah, pesky bunch. I think they'd make it hard on people. They certainly play hard. They have four lines that roll quite a bit. And of course they've got Sergei Bobrovsky on the back end. So they get a fighter's chance, but I think it would behoove them big time to get to the second or third spot in the Metro.
What's the update on Ryan Murray?
Skating by himself, not yet joining the team. He's still a couple weeks off. I think, you know, this is a situation where he would probably, if he's ready to play in the first round, it would be a few games into the first round.
Okay.
A tough load for anybody, but that's where he's at right now.
What's the injury?
Knee. He had knee surgery, scope, 3 weeks ago now, 4 weeks ago now. Just got caught along the wall, just a bad twist, and they went in and fixed her up, and now he's off crutches, now he's skating, so he's not too far away.
So you got Wisniewski and Johnson, Tootin and Nikitin. That's pretty much the top four now with Murray out. Who's the third pair?
Well, they love Prout. They have Tootin with Wisniewski. They've got Jack Johnson with Prout.
Okay.
And then the third pair has Nikitin with Savard, or in some cases, your old friend Nick Schultz goes in with David Savard on the third pair.
Oh, Nikitin's the healthy scratch then. So it's Nikitin and Schultz who are kind of the 6-7.
Yeah, they've been going back and forth. They also have Tim Erickson up here.
Yeah.
Part of the Nash trade. So.
Yeah, and he's only, I think, played like two games though, right?
Yeah. I mean, he's the guy, he was hurt for a while as well, but they've been fairly healthy on the back end. So he's been the extra. They still like him, but there's not a spot for him.
Aaron, for years, you and I have talked about Ryan Johansson, and then people wonder, well, was he used improperly, that maybe it delayed his development? And Oilers fans look at him and are maybe drooling, thinking, hey, maybe Ryan Nugent-Hopkins can have that burst-out season. Now, Nugent-Hopkins did have 52 points in 62 games as a rookie and then got injured, but you know, hasn't produced since. Ryan Johansson now becoming only the third Blue Jacket in franchise history to score 30 goals. He's been clearly their most dynamic goal scorer all season long, leads their team in points. What's the biggest difference you've seen in his game? Is it opportunity, or is he doing something different on the ice?
You know, I think this is what he has done before. I mean, this is an incredible story. I never get tired of passing it along. His first year, he played BC Junior as a 16-year-old. They taught him how to hold the camera to videotape games for scouting purposes because he was scratched so often. Right? Now, if that doesn't say something to you, 2 years later, he's the number four overall draft pick. It's been a similar climb here in the NHL. The first year, it looked like he was in over his head. Everybody, myself included, maybe it still was a bad idea, but Scott Housen and Scott O'Neill had him in the NHL playing fourth line left wing, totally out of place. Looked like he's just hanging on, basically. You've seen guys like that. Last year, he became a checking line center, a defensive-minded player. The big, big difference this year is from the red line forward, the kid wants the puck. He's holding onto the puck. He's extending plays. He's starting to realize how big he is. He's starting to realize that he can knock people over, that he can shield the puck from people. I think he was in awe of this league and this game the first two games to the point where it paralyzed him. And he was an effective player, but in no means a dangerous player. This year he's become a really dangerous player.
And he's doing it, like, obviously he's had good line mates, Aaron, but it's not something where he's riding on the coattails of anyone else. He's really taken charge as the leader.
Yeah, well, absolutely. I mean, for the longest time, he's had a rookie to his left, Boone Jenner, and a struggling veteran, I'm putting it nicely, Nathan Horton, to his right. And Horton has really been fighting the puck for a long time now. Ryan Johansson has really, he has carried this team offensively. He's not benefiting. And look around, look at the names on the roster. He's not puffing up his stats by being next to somebody else. He's brought Boone Jenner along very, very well. He had Foligno with him earlier in the season. Foligno made him skate. Foligno's got the great wheels. But really, Ryan Johansson, this has been a tremendous individual transformation from 1 year to the next. I've never seen anything to this extent. I mean, Nash went from 19 to 41 goals, his rookie to his sophomore year. But you could see the big puppy growing into it. There was no indication with Ryan Johansson that this was coming at all.
Has he become kind of the new Rick Nash for Columbus fans?
Yeah, except they really like him. How about that?
They didn't like Nash in Columbus?
Well, I know they did. They grew weary of him.
Okay.
After a while. At the end, they got really frustrated by the really high oil point that he showed. And Johansson went off the rails a couple of weeks ago in Montreal, right the night before the Rangers came here in Columbus when Nash returned. Johansson, I mean, had his first NHL fight, scored the game winner. I mean, had a momentous evening, sort of his coming out party, if you will, at an exclamation point on what's been a really good season.
Aaron Portsline joins us. You talked about Nathan Horton and how he's struggling. Man, when he came off the injury, he looked great early on. Was that just the emotion, the adrenaline, and what's gone wrong in his game since that great early start?
Yeah, I think it was adrenaline right off the bat. And you know what? He's out. He's not playing tomorrow night against Colorado, a lower body injury. I get the sense he's been playing through something. But the burning question in Columbus the last couple of weeks, there's been some surprise scratches. Cam Atkinson, 19 goals, has been scratched. R.J. Umberger has been scratched. Tomorrow night will be 4 games and 6 for him as a healthy scratch. He's got 18 goals, so almost 220 goal scorers, and they're healthy scratching these guys. Many have wondered, like, why not Nathan Horton? Because this guy has really been fighting the puck lately. The play just has died with him. It is the small things, the little things along the board, the touch plays. It appears as though it's a mystery to him. And he has said it, that the shoulder, this was not a normal shoulder surgery. This was bone being sawed off one part of the shoulder, fused with another part of the shoulder to hold it into place. This was a profound, major surgery. He may not be right until next year. Fighting it. And frustrated, you could see it, you could feel it, and we'll see where he goes. But he is out tomorrow night against Colorado.
Yeah, shoulders, when guys come back from it, Aaron, especially in this game, you got to have so much rotation and movement, and there's so much jarring on it. You wonder, and I always appreciate the players who come back and play because they've been given clearance by the doctor, but we see it so often. They're just not the same for a while.
Right. And, you know, especially a guy like Horton, this guy uses his shoulders. I mean, he's a kind of a bull, a guy that knocks people over, goes into traffic. He's not Nathan Horton right now.
Looking at the schedule remaining, Columbus going to make the playoffs?
I think they will. If only because look at Toronto. My God, that beeping noise you hear is just them backing up in an incredible way. 8 straight losses this time of year. Washington's right there with them, but there's something about that Capitals team that doesn't exactly blow me away. And Columbus has the tiebreaker against both the Capitals and the Leafs right now. I think Columbus gets in. I wouldn't sign off on them getting second or third in the Metro, so I assume if they get in, it's going to be as a wild card team. The Rangers and Flyers are playing really, really well right now. But yeah, I look at this team. I think they're going to get in, second time in franchise history.
Aaron, I have to ask you, When did you know what the playoff format would be? Because I honestly, I did not know that the way it is now was the way it was at the start of the season. And I've talked to three GMs, and it seems like some of them were surprised.
Well, it's funny you're asking the guy from Columbus about the playoff format, hey? I've had a bunch of people come up to me and say, you know, it's a seven-game series, right? And they go back because, you know, Columbus has only been in the playoffs once. What they're trying to do, but what they can't, if they have the wild card, this becomes trickier. They're trying to create those intense rivalries like the Battle of Alberta.
Yeah.
Where Calgary and Edmonton had to go through each other each year. Columbus, now in the East, if they play Pittsburgh in the first round, it's going to be a gong show because there's so many Penguins fans in this area. They were here before the Blue Jackets were. If they play the Rangers, you've got the Rick Nash theme and all of the players that have traded sides in both directions. If they play the Flyers, it's Steve Mason, it's Jake Voracek. There's great matchups for this club, you know, almost no matter what. Boston would probably be the worst case scenario, but it's the 2-3 teams play each other. The worst wild card plays the first seed.
Just to me, I don't understand why they did. Like, I thought it was just, okay, you'll have a crossover. And I understand why. If the fifth-place team in the Metropolitan is better than the fourth in the Atlantic, that fifth-place team goes over. Makes perfect sense to me. But in the West, for instance, St. Louis has the best record, right? But there's a good chance they'll have to go two time zones to play Phoenix rather than just play Minnesota, who is like 1 point maybe better at the end of it, right? It's almost like they're penalizing the teams in the West. I know the Eastern teams are all in the same time zone, so it doesn't necessarily matter and travels a little bit farther, but it just seems awkward to me that the best team in the West will have to travel farther outside of their own conference.
Yeah, it is that, but they also wanted to set up so that it could be 5-1 division and 3 in the other. They didn't want it to be as rigid as 4-4.
Mm-hmm. But can't you do that by just having a crossover?
Well, this sort of ameliorates the possibility, though, of the argument of a team in the West getting in because there's only 14 teams versus there being 16 teams and fewer spots in the East, if that makes any sense. This way, you're almost guaranteed, not wholly guaranteed, but almost guaranteed that the 8 best teams in each conference are going to get in.
Yeah, I would have had the 5th best in the whatever division crosses over. If they're better than the fourth, and that's the one team that moves over, and that's it. But it kind of screws up the team, I guess, in the West. In the East, it doesn't matter, of course, because everybody's in the same time zone. So,
just having been in the West for so long, I just don't think there's any way you can have a schedule matrix that doesn't and somehow screw the teams in the West.
Yeah, that's probably fair. It's true. Well, hopefully the Blue Jackets get in. It's always good seeing fan bases have a team in the playoffs. And eventually, Oiler fans will eventually get back in. Someday, Aaron, someday. I don't know when. But eventually they'll get back to the play.
You had a run there, if I remember the 80s well.
Yeah, 30. Yeah, but you know what? This generation of Oiler fans hasn't. Tell you that. And anybody who's if your kid is 7, they've never even seen the playoffs. They don't even know what it is.
Right. Well, think of the generation of fans here in Columbus who have known nothing but generation of
brutal.
My God.
Yeah. No, it's good, and that's why hopefully they get in and hopefully they win a playoff series. Because if they win one playoff series, that's when your fans really become engaged to a team, no doubt.
She goes, and that's when you have a rival. That's when you have someone who can't stand you. Right now, the Blue Jackets are everybody's kid brother in the NHL. Everybody wants them to do well. That'd be great. Nobody hates them. That's a sign of a team that hasn't had much success.
Very true, Aaron. Well, hopefully you enjoy some playoffs. We appreciate your time.
Looking forward to it. Thanks, Jason. Thanks for having me.